This week we'll be reviewing the Chinese Grand Prix, talking about lots of different penalties and one very angry driver. Hello everyone, welcome to Back of the Grid. I'm Chris, joined as ever by Stu.
Hello.
And by Tom.
Hello.
And we finally had a Chinese Grand Prix. We said we wouldn't believe it until it really happened, but...
It happened.
It sure happened.
Not just a Grand Prix, but a sprint race. Are we allowed to call it a sprint race, or is it just a sprint? A sprint as well.
Sprint TM.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I've almost entirely forgot what happened in the sprint at this point in time.
The sprint was pretty good. Sprint qualifying was ridiculous.
Sprint qualifying was extremely good.
Yeah.
Both qualifying sessions actually were really good.
I think the race was... we're not allowed to call it a race. Oh, yeah. Got to get used to this. Sprint. Should be used to it after like three seasons of doing it. Or
yeah, they keep changing the name. So what chance do we stand?
Yeah, I thought the sprint was pretty good. Was the obvious precursor to the Grand Prix that we knew it would be. But the fact that qualifying was interesting for it at least gave us like... Verstappen had to sort of fight his way at least back to the front.
It gave us the mixed up grid that all sprint racers should have by default. That's what it gave us. It gave, you know, that's the opportunity is there for them to mix up these races and make them interesting by putting cars in places where they probably wouldn't normally be. And that happened just by accident. And look at what a great race the sprint race was. Who knew?
If only there was some kind of order based on merit that we could use to determine the sprint grid at every event.
I can't possibly think what that order might be.
It would be so nice if that existed, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it would
weird.
Be, yeah. Anyway.
It was in many ways a weekend sort of defined by incidents and penalties. So I think we're going to kind of structure talking about this race, initially at least, by... the penalties and just the, as ever, massive inconsistencies in the penalties themselves, the way they're applied and all the stuff around them.
It says everything you need to about a race weekend when the thing you have to start with is penalty review.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just go through them one by one and talk about them in isolation. Then we can talk about the penalties more broadly.
Okay.
So we'll start back in the sprint when Alonso was given a 10-second penalty and 3 license points for making contact with Carlos Sainz, which is where Alonso got himself a puncture in the process.
Yeah.
He did
cause a collision.
He did.
He was definitely putting his car in a place where a collision was a possibility, and that possibility came true, I suppose.
He was predominantly to blame?
He was, by the letter of the law, I suppose, he was predominantly to blame. And I think in the sort of getting your front wheels alongside the rear wheels and all of that business, he was... But then again, it was hard racing. They'd been going sort of semi-side-by-side for several corners, like... I don't know. It felt a bit... 10 seconds and 3 license points feels like a lot for that.
It feels a bit like punishment for racing, doesn't it?
It does.
I think the license points are the harsh bit for me, for sure. And I mean, the time penalty is like redundant, isn't it?
Well, he retired, didn't he?
So he retired.
But then that could translate into a... There was talk of it translating into a grid penalty for the race itself, or maybe for the next sprint or something, I don't know. But like... Again, that would have seemed quite harsh when his race has been ruined by what happened to him. So,
for the next sprint would be hilarious. Like in a few months' time, everyone's like, "Oh yeah, Alonso was back 3 places." Like, why?
Yeah.
What did he do?
Yeah, yeah. What?
Yeah.
Next on the list was Logan Sargeant. He got 10 seconds and 2 penalty points for passing Hulkenberg under the safety car, which on paper sounds pretty terrible and egregious. However...
Yeah, that was never a penalty of that magnitude in a million years. That was ridiculous. I can't believe they slapped him with that.
Yeah.
That.
So Hulkenberg was coming out of the pits and Sargeant passed him. They had to show you a slow motion replay to really be able to determine that Hülkenberg was, he was literally inches ahead at the safety car line. There's zero chance Sargeant would have been able to tell that from his cockpit. There's no way even the team would have been able to tell from watching it in real time.
No.
It was also redundant to no lasting advantage because Sargeant pitted the end of that lap anyway. Yeah. So, bizarre.
Yeah,
really, it feels like unnecessarily harsh.
Job's worth penalty to me, that. It feels like, you know, Karen was in the penalty giving booth this week and they've just absolutely sent it. Nope, you can't do that. Penalty for you. You get a penalty. You get a penalty.
I mean, if it was like blatantly obvious that, because obviously it's a safety car line on the exit, isn't it? So if it was blatantly obvious that one car was ahead of the other, because there was another situation where was it Alonso and Sainz maybe? I can't remember who it was. There was another scenario though in the race behind the safety car or under the virtual safety car where somebody essentially like really punched it coming out the pits to make sure they stayed ahead and that they got to the line in time. And I genuinely can't remember who it was, but like, how is that a situation that was as close as it was clearly not a penalty, but this one that's like the nose of the car at most, I think it was. Like, you know, you've got a front wing touching the line and the other one, the wheels are on the line. So you've got literally the length of the nose and the front wing ahead. At that point, like, braking distances are different. Like, it can't be easy to be 100% sure he's ahead of me at that point.
Yeah.
And there's got to be like some benefit of doubt, I think, in that scenario.
Yeah,
or they've got to like give the team an opportunity to say he was ahead of you at the line, let him back through and obviously adjust for that racing into that first corner.
Here's an idea. Why not have a transponder on
exactly
the
what
line
I was about to say.
That tells that why not use the same technology that they've been using for years and years and years on the start finish line, just apply that logic to the safety car line or the pit exit line, whatever it is. And then just let the systems do the work, and then you could the team know straight away you've got to give that position to the car behind you because the transponder says so. So
yeah, you could very easily just have a page on the live timing screens that the teams have that just shows the order the cars last hit that transponder. Surely, like, because these days the stewards say they will never tell teams to let other cars through. It's up to the teams to make that decision themselves,
which is also stupid.
But there's just no way Williams could have known whether they needed to or not. The penalty itself is harsh. The two license points as well is, again, it feels like, oh well, the rule book says if you pass under the safety car, it's two license points because that's a really dangerous thing to do. But like, apply some logic to the actual situation you're looking
at. Yeah, there's context there, surely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. But then, you know, on the same, you could argue on this at the same time, we beg for consistency from the stewards, and there's an argument to say they're trying to apply things consistently and not apply penalties to outcomes and things like that, and just enforce the rules as written. So it's like, in a way, they can't really win because the facilities aren't there for them to enforce the rules properly in the first place. They're kind of having to do a lot of this stuff on a wing and a prayer.
I think this though is like, you're in a different situation there. You're not the rule is written around like being on track racing. Effectively, there should be some sort of caveat to do with a car leaving the pits and a car being in the pits. Like, I don't know, every car leaving the pits is technically under a blue flag to a car that's on circuit. There you go. Not everyone's going to like it, but it's problem solved, isn't it? Because anyone coming out of the pits is not within the realms of being able to like punch it. Like, if you're essentially between the start finish line and the safety car line, depending on obviously exactly where they are in relation to each other. But if you're within a certain point of the safety car line, a car coming out of the pits is essentially blue flagged for you. And that is just the way that it works. Like, it's do you know what I mean? Like you've got to have some sort of exception, yeah. I think. You can't just apply the same rule of there is no undertaking under safety car, full stop, it is 10 seconds, 2 penalty points, and so on, when that's how you're judging it. Like, it's very different to being in a train of cars and deciding to overtake someone for some reason. Because they're very different scenarios.
Because Ricciardo, for example, Ricciardo also got a post-race 10-second penalty that's been converted to a three-place grid drop, which is a separate thing to talk about. He overtook Magnussen under the safety car, but that was a very different situation. I think it was something like Magnussen had like slowed up a lot, or Magnussen had passed Ricciardo at the pit exit, and Ricciardo thought he should be allowed to pass, and Ricciardo just took it upon himself that this should be allowed, I'm just going to drive past him on the track. And that's a very different situation. Like, a driver's made an active choice to overtake somebody under safety car. Don't really have a problem with being penalised for that. But when it is purely accidental with it's such incidental. Fine margins. Completely.
So, yeah, we can conclude that this one, that it was an extremely harsh penalty. Yeah.
The Ricciardo one, not necessarily a harsh penalty. I think converting that to a three-place grid drop for the next race because he was taken out of the race when other penalties for people out of the race didn't get, like the Alonso one you mentioned, just disappear into the ether is a little weird. I don't understand why that one's been converted and other ones haven't.
Yeah.
But there strange. We go.
Magnussen?
Magnussen got 10-second penalty. He also got 2 points for causing a collision with Tsunoda, which put Tsunoda out of the race. Pretty slam dunk on that. He just sort of lunged.
Just a lazy move, really. Like,
well, he lost control, didn't he? It was his rear. Yeah. He was sort of oversteered, then understeered into him, and it just snaking around just made a mess. Yeah.
Which brings us on to Lance Stroll, who crashed into the back of Ricciardo under the safety car, taking Ricciardo out of the race, massively jamming in Piastri's car. That also apparently 10 seconds and 2 points. So what Alonso did to Sainz in the sprint race is worth one more penalty point on his license than what Stroll did in the Grand Prix.
That is ridiculous.
There's just no consistency.
It's so ridiculous.
It makes no sense, does it?
Like, Stroll, it was so in the wrong for this as well. He just wasn't paying attention.
It was awful. Did you see Ricciardo's ranting?
Yeah.
In the pen afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll read some of the quotes, people who've not seen it. he said, maybe now when he sees it, he might take some accountability, but if he doesn't, I can't help him and nor can anyone else. And he said he'd watched it from his perspective and he wasn't looking, he's looking the wrong place. He's looking at the apex and wasn't paying attention. Yeah. Then somebody told him that Stroll had been blaming Ricciardo for it. And Ricciardo said, I slowly started to calm down and then I was told what Lance thinks of the incident. Apparently I'm an idiot and it was my fault. That made my blood boil clear as day and also behind a safety car. The only thing you've got to do is watch the car in front. We can't predict what the leader's going to do. The race doesn't start for the control line. I'm doing my best not to say what I want to say, but F that guy. And then I think it was Piastri, someone was asking Piastri about it and said, oh, well, you know, like, there's a lot of constantine and you're under the safety car. And Piastri just said something like, yeah, but no one else crashed into each other.
Yeah, there's only one person despite all... Because the catalyst of it all, the start of it all, was Alonso getting a bit too... Because I noticed this weekend, if you got a little bit too much on that curb on the outside, it was essentially generating lockups because Alonso wasn't the only one to fall victim.
Yeah, there was no grip.
There were a few people, if you got out on that curb, you kind of ended up locking the outside front because of, I guess, maybe unloading it from hitting the curb. And Alonso wasn't the only one, but if you actually watch, there's a replay of that entire incident from sort of, I guess, grandstand kind of view, like alongside it. And you just sort of see Alonso slide through the shot. But then everybody else, because obviously they're like kind of focused on the guy in front, they all kind of all go deep with him because they're all kind of following his line and they don't want to risk. Like, I can't remember who's directly behind him, but it's like they obviously don't want to risk going for the apex and overtaking him and then being caught out for overtaking him. They're like attempting to stay behind him despite him going way deep. And obviously That then causes everyone to start bunching up very quickly and Constantinoing together. And then Stroll's... The weird thing is how far away from Ricciardo Stroll actually is at this point.
Yeah, he's miles back.
It was because, one of the biggest gaps in the train.
Yeah, and he still manages to clatter into the back of him, end up underneath him, and obviously push him forward into Piastri as well. Yet the Ferraris, the Aston Martin, the McLaren, and the Ricciardo car... all like managing to stay in control of the vehicles and not in the back of each other. And then here comes Stroll just like steaming into the corner, into
many,
the back of them all.
Many cars down the line. I think as well, like the idea that like someone locking up causes other people to have to brake harder is nonsense, because obviously if you lock a wheel, then you're no longer slowing down. Right, your wheels are and brakes. Well, you're going to progress further forward. Whenever anyone locks up, they go wide of the apex, so you go further forward. Yeah. So people have got ample opportunity to get their cars slowed down appropriately. In fact, you've got more opportunity than what you'd expect to have to get your car slowed and not go into the back of another car.
It's just a non-excuse,
which
isn't it?
They've all done. And then the excuse. I mean, that is an excuse that Alonso's locked up and caused this in the first place. Is utter nonsense. It's
It's
got nothing to do with Alonso.
For the record, I'm not saying he's the cause of it.
I know you're
what
not.
I'm saying is that's kind of where it starts, and everyone ends up in a weird position offline, slowing down
But
everyone else is looking in the right place.
Well, that's what I'm kind of getting at, though, is like literally everybody else behind Alonso who's having to react to that in real time is managing absolutely fine. Yeah. Then you've got Stroll... coming from miles back, who's still
We're in agreement. Yeah, Stroll hitting the back of Ricciardo has got absolutely nothing to do with Alonso.
No. Someone.
It's nothing. No matter where you're looking, you should only be looking at the car ahead of you. You're not looking at what Alonso's doing, the fact that he's locked up. Yeah.
Someone in the Discord over the weekend said something to the effect of it's another case of Stroll just looking out of his depth. Like, he's out there making a mistake that you just shouldn't be making at this level.
Yeah.
It's just a massive concentration lapse is what it is.
Yeah, like, completely. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And, you know, anyone can do that. Like, any sports person can lose concentration. But it's a particularly bad one because you've gone into the back of another car. And whatever way you cut it, you know, the car that goes into the back of the car ahead is just always at fault.
Yeah.
Unless they're being brake checked or something, which is just not true. And the fact the fact that he immediately was on the radio saying that he was trying to make out that people just suddenly slammed on the anchors is just absolute. Yeah. Again, it's just nonsense. Lies, nonsense. It's complete nonsense.
Yeah.
So
it's just the fact that he continues to take up a spot on the grid and looks like he's going to continue to. He's just. Very frustrating, especially when Alonso is outperforming him by such enormous margins.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Okay.
I won't say as well, obviously Ricciardo was extremely upset after that. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that Ricciardo was having a really good weekend. Like, this was the best we'd seen of Ricciardo for a long time, really.
Well, since he came back, really.
Pretty much. Like, he was a good half a second ahead of his teammate in both qualifying sessions. He beat him in the... I think he finished 11th in the sprint, Ricciardo.
Does he have the new chassis yet?
He did have the new chassis this weekend.
Yeah.
I know I disparage that a little bit, but maybe. Good to see. Like... shame it didn't work out that way, but like the numbers were looking good for Ricciardo. Like, I wanted to continue going that way.
He was looking like he could have maybe fought with those around him before getting hit for those last point or so, didn't he? Like, he looked potential for him at least.
Yeah.
Until he got clattered.
All those points now mean Logan Sargeant's now up to 8 points, and he has to avoid gaining 4 more all the way until Monza. He's got to survive 11 Grand Prix and 2 sprints without gaining any more points to avoid a race ban. Perez is still on, although he didn't gain any new ones, he's still on 8 points for another 12 rounds. Alonso at the start of the season had a completely clean license, and now in the space of three rounds, he's halfway to a ban. He's just been racking up points like crazy.
Wowza.
Yes, that's something to keep an eye on as well. Right, let's have a run through just other bits and bobs for the race. So obviously another sprint and Grand Prix win for Max. Had to work a little bit for the sprint race, but the Grand Prix was just, he was just gone, wasn't he?
Yeah. Another typical Grand Prix weekend in Formula One.
Most interesting, I think, from the Red Bull point of view, as an example of just the depth of quality in that team. So the second race in a row, the four fastest pit stops in the race were all Red Bull stops. Both of them were also double stacks. So on lap 13, they gave Max a 2.1 second and then Perez 2 seconds right behind him. Then lap 23, they did a 1.9 and a 2 second.
But when there's like, what, 13 seconds between the two cars, you can probably quite easily pull off double stacks. It's not like they're like 2 seconds behind each other.
One of them was under VSC, I think, so it was a bit more of a double stack. But the first one was pushing the boundaries of what you can call a double stack. But regardless, they were still out there with both sets of tyres and, you know, they did the double stack procedure at least. Yeah. And also the fastest 9 stops this season, they were all held by Red Bull.
Wow. I mean, they are a sight to behold in the pit lane.
Yeah, like,
I'll never forget, you know, the one I worked on, I remember doing the edit for their fastest ever pit stop that they, at the time when they had it. McLaren have since beat it, but the car is off the ground before it's stationary on that.
Yeah.
Like I've said this before on here, like it's just insane seeing it. Yeah. It sort of goes up and along just a little bit just as it comes to a stop. That's how precise and how perfect they are at just absolutely nailing that pit stop every single time. It's amazing to watch. After you've watched this, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm not sure exactly which one it is, but just search Red Bull fastest ever pit stop, it'll come up.
As ever, it was McLaren and Ferrari sort of fighting for the spoils behind Red Bull. Norris ended up being he was second in the end, in fact, and he was very surprised to be there. He said he'd got a bet with someone in the team that they'd be 35 seconds behind Ferrari.
Yeah.
And he ended up P2. He one-stopped. They put him on hards under the safety car. And he one-stopped when everyone around him two-stopped to get track position and managed to hold off Perez and the Ferraris behind. I think that was as much Norris doing an extremely good job of that strategy as it was Perez not really doing as good a job as you might expect. Like, I would have expected Perez on... Then again, Perez wasn't on that much younger tyres, was he? Because Norris stayed out under the first safety car and only pitted under the second one. So he only Perez only actually had like a one or two lap tyre difference. So
There was something that essentially brought both Red Bulls in, wasn't there?
Was it Bottas?
Norris's stop was under the Bottas VSC, wasn't it? And then the Red Bulls stopped during the one afterwards that was to do with... Oh, the other way around?
Yeah.
All right. Never mind.
So Norris actually stayed out for the first one, yeah. So actually that was kind of just McLaren outmaneuvering Red Bull a little bit there, I think. But also a very good drive for Norris to make that one stopper work.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Poor old Piastri had most of his diffuser scattered on the runoff at the hairpin somewhere. So he struggled home for 8th place. Ferrari could only manage 4th and 5th this weekend. Signs just said that McLaren was the best car. Ferrari?
Sorry, I thought you said Mercedes.
Oh, no.
It's because I was reading Mercedes. My apologies, carry on.
Although I have put 4th place down for 2 different people there. Yes, 4th and 5th for Ferrari. Who, again, didn't qualify all that well either, did they? Which they need to get on top of. But anyway, yeah, Mercedes were 6th and 9th after a pretty ropey weekend. 7th.
Yeah.
Or is that... Yeah, 7th.
No, Hamilton's
Oh, no. They ignore me. I'm just throwing myself out. I'm thinking championship order now.
Well, this is a great making a mess podcast, of it. Isn't it?
We're just saying numbers. Yes, Hamilton did indeed finish 9th after going out in Q1 and fighting back from 18th. It was weird because he qualified really well in sprint quali, finished second in the sprint. In the sprint. And then decided to just make some massive setup changes when Parc Fermé reopened and promptly went out in Q1. Like,
there's literally a saying where if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What, I don't know why they've decided to make such a significant change when they were somewhat... there's an argument to say that maybe they were set up aimed around the wet conditions that we had in quali, and that was sort of gave them the generous starting position and stuff like that. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think they just went way too far away from a setup that was working. It's not like the race was wet. If the quali was wet and the sprint was wet, it'd have sort of made sense of like, if they've gone really heavy on that side of the setup, let's bring it back away more to a dry setup. But when the race was dry and it was clear that the setup worked because they held second, why move considerably away from that? I just don't get it.
Strange
choice.
It seems
like a very strange move.
And I know people like to complain about Hamilton moaning on the radio all the time. And for the most part, I'm normally in the camp of it's selective editing. They play the clips that fit a narrative or that are going to, you know, get clicks or whatever. However, this race, I was sick to death of hearing Lewis Hamilton moaning about stuff. It's like, it seemed like every little lap we heard him moan about something. It's like, just
The thing is, though, again, it fits a narrative. It fits this narrative of he's leaving at the end of the season to go to Ferrari because he's had enough. Yep. So literally, the moment he opens his mouth with anything remotely negative, they are going to play it. Because again, it fits a narrative, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Next, Alonso had two really good qualifying sessions. He was third in both qualifying, in fact. Dropped out of contention in the sprint, as we mentioned. In the Grand Prix, he did a weird three-stopper when everyone else came in under the second safety car and almost entirely put on hards. He put on a set of softs, which were never going to make it to the end. He managed 20 laps on them and then had to pit again for mediums and then sort of did a bit of a late comeback to fight back up to seventh. But
Weird choice.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they were trying there.
Yeah, I wonder if there was like some sort of like tire deficit of something that they had and they maybe had to go for the softs or something. Maybe they didn't have any new mediums or...
Yeah, because he put on medium. Maybe they were just out of fresh hard, so he had to do a soft and a medium stint, I guess.
Maybe.
I mean, it was impressive watching him drive back through the field. It was good to finish. What was it? Seventh? Did you say he finished sixth?
Seventh in the end. Yeah.
Seventh. Yeah. I mean, you know, I enjoyed watching him chase down the other cars and put the overtakes in. But when there's such a massive tire differential, they're kind of gimmies, aren't they? They're not really heart in your mouth overtakes.
Hulkenberg, another Q3 appearance, another points finish. Man's having a heck of a season. He's doing the business for... I mean, I think they've already got more points finishes this season than they did the entirety of last year now.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, pretty low bar, wasn't it? Hulkenberg's now equaled the record set by Andrea de Cesaris for the most race starts without a win. This was his 208th start. So unless something extremely unusual happens in the last race, I think Hulkenberg will be taking that record outright in a couple of weeks' time. The Audi talk around Hulkenberg seems to be, it's not just people who say things that are going to get them attention and click saying this now. Like, proper journalists seem to be saying there's something to this. Like, there is genuine conversations going on. Which is interesting. I mean, Nico Rosberg basically said they're talking to him because Carlos Sainz's team are complaining that they've not offered him as much money as he really wants. it's starting to sound a lot like one of the Sauber seats next year is going to be taken by either Sainz or Hulkenberg. But we'll see where that plays out. And then last on my list in terms of interesting teams to talk about is Sauber themselves, actually. Bottas was actually having a really good race at the start. He was sort of looking like he might be in contention for points, but he had some kind of power unit issue, which obviously put him out of the race, which is a real shame for him.
Yeah.
And then Zhou, we've got to talk about him.
Yeah.
I mean, made it into Q3 in sprint quali, which was like the crowd went crazy for that, which was really cool to see. Didn't manage to get points in either race, but they still gave him his own little parking spot at the end on the start finish straight, yeah. Which I honestly think that was quite a nice touch. Like the first home driver at that Grand Prix there's ever been. Like clearly the vast majority of the crowd were there to see him.
Yeah.
It's easy to be cynical about stuff like that, but honestly I don't have that much of a problem with them giving the crowd what they want ultimately.
The sort of proxy cheers that Bottas was getting for just purely being in this Sauber was great as well. Like they just didn't care as long as it was black and green and going round. They were just absolutely loving life. Which
they didn't care, or they couldn't tell.
Oh no, wait, guys, wrong one. Sorry.
It is. I'm in the other camp. I think it's a bit strange that they do this sort of stuff. I feel like they're kind of like I'm more of a, you know, show people when they deserve it. And I'm not sure finishing 14th warrants being singled out and paraded in front of a crowd. But, you know, I think just because you're a certain nationality and it's your home race, you know, you don't see them. If they did that for every British driver, they'd be here all week, like at the end of every race.
Yes, but there's been British drivers since literally the first ever Grand Prix. Like, this is the first ever of his nationality to ever race there. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and he's in the sport for multiple years. It's not going to be an every year thing, is it? It's a thing that is happening, I guess, as a one-off for that first instance.
I guess that's fine then, actually, when you put it that way. Yeah. Then, yeah, okay, I've got more time for it.
I think generally most drivers in their home races, when it's like the first one of significance for any length of time, like for example Verstappen, you're generally up there at the front on the podium and stuff anyway, so you don't need to be singled out like that. And I think that maybe makes it even more obvious that because Zhou was where he was by the end of the race, it made it more obvious that they kind of brought him round to this separate thing. But yeah, I think as a one-off thing, it's fine. I mean, to be fair, for the crowd that was there and hasn't had a race in 5 years because of everything that's gone on, I think to just, on the first one back, kind of let them have that moment is like kind of a fine thing as a one-off. But the sort of... For the amount of support that they were giving over the weekend, I think they deserve just a moment with him, which is fair enough in my opinion.
And I think the fact that China is such a potentially enormous market for F1,
it's an enormous market for anything, isn't it?
China? Well, yeah, it's interesting as well. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the likes of Stefano Domenicali are going to be out there talking to team principals, going to bat for Zhou, like, because his place on the grid is far from guaranteed, and having a Chinese driver on the grid is extremely good for Formula One as a business. It's going to be interesting to see if he does keep his seat or if anybody else takes him on. I think he's driving pretty damn well this season.
If his performance in quali and GP was anything like it had been in sprint quali and sprint sprint race, then it'd have been a pretty decent weekend for him overall, to be honest. It was just, for whatever reason, when it got to actual quali and GP, it just seemed to be off the pace. Whether that's maybe because he dialed into a setup much quicker than others that he was comfortable with, and it took others until like fully fledged quali maybe to dial things in a bit, and everyone kind of leapfrogged him a bit. I don't know if there's anything in that, and he just kind of stayed at the same sort of pace between the two and everyone else sort of improved slightly. I don't know if there's anything in that, but
I, I will say
overall,
well,
he was looking okay at the start of the weekend, to be fair to him.
Yeah, and piggybacking off that as well, like, I don't want to give the sprint format too much praise, but we have said a lot that most of the time the sprint is just a preview of the Grand Prix. And actually, I think this new format where there's a more of a separation and there's an opening apart firmly between them actually didn't feel so much like we know what's going to happen in the Grand Prix because we've seen the sprint. Like, there was changes in the running order a little bit. And
I'll reserve some judgment on that until we see one that's like a dry weekend throughout.
That's very true.
Because it really is going to depend on how much the crazy quali session. But, I mean, having said that, Norris qualified well in sprint quali in the wet and then also backed it up with a GP performance. So it somewhat translated, I guess, even though there was like ups and downs through the weekend for Norris. He started in pole in sprint quali and he finished second in the race, which I guess if you sort of said that was the normal quali session and he'd finished second in the race, you'd have kind of expected that. And
yeah.
So, the pace was roughly the same across the two different events, if you want to call
I think like Norris in the sprint race was kind of like mid. I think qualifying for the sprint race was kind of its own thing anyway, and it was always going to be a bit of any qualifying in those conditions is always going to give you a mixed up grid. I think what they have got kind of right is making the sprint section of the weekend its own sort of self contained little piece of Formula One. But I think the argument against it is kind of that it renders the sprint unimportant almost, because sprint qualifying on a Friday you're probably gonna miss because you're at work, and then the sprint race itself you'll maybe watch instead of qualifying, or I don't know, like it just seems like whatever Formula One are wanting to get out of having sprint races, I don't think having it in this format is giving them that.
It's like, it's always going to be secondary, isn't it? Like, there's no way it's not going to be.
Exactly. It's not unimportant, but it's certainly not anything like as important as the actual, you know, Grand Prix qualifying, Grand Prix race.
Yeah.
No, completely.
I think they're better off just getting rid of them altogether, to be honest, but that's by the by.
Likewise. Should do some awards.
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it.
Who's your driver of the day?
I think Norris. I think it has to be Norris.
I mean, you're making my argument for me, so
if anyone else backs me up. On Sunday, right? Or driver of the weekend, or driver of the day, or how are we doing?
You can make whatever argument you want. It's our award. We can do what we want.
I think Norris. I just think that he made the strategy work. He drove himself. I think this is one of those races where you see a driver really like put themselves in the sort of upper echelons of drivers for me.
Yeah.
And I think this is that race for Norris. I think he's absolutely nailed it. I think he'd fit in as top dog at any Formula One team now. Yeah. I think he's so experienced and he's so damn quick and he's just so composed in the way he goes about his races.
I think if you were going to consider anything like separating the two, I would say Hamilton for a similar reason for the performance that he put in the sprint, and then obviously Norris for doing something very similar in the GP. And
pretty
like,
opposing fortunes, actually, because Norris made an absolute hash of the sprint.
Yes.
But then put on the performance in the bit that really matters, I suppose. I'm going to give an honourable mention to Hülkenberg, but I am inclined to agree with you that I think Norris does deserve driver of the day.
Yeah, that was easy.
What about move of the day? Quite a lot to choose from.
There were quite a few, to be fair. I mean, very, very early on, so there was a lot to come after it, but Alonso managing to hang it round the outside and do what Norris couldn't, albeit the person he was fighting did a little bit less understeering towards him and kind of released the wheel a little less than what Norris got against him. But I mean, it's racing, isn't it? Like, I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying, like, Alonso's move around the outside, he made it stick. And to be fair, he nearly got two of them, didn't he? in the grand scheme of it.
Yeah, well, he was marginally ahead of Verstappen for the briefest of moments, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a good move overall.
Yeah.
He's led a race. He can say he's led a race.
for like one timing sector. I know Discord wanted us to mention Alonso's save on the final corner late in the race as a move of the day.
As soon as I saw it, I was thinking to myself, that might be my move of the day, that save. Yeah. That is a killer save. How has he done that?
The reaction time when you watch the onboard is...
Yeah.
Like he's moved his hands before his brain's even fully engage what's happening there. That's a pure reaction save.
Instinct. It's pure instinct, isn't it? It's amazing.
If anything as well, it was maybe worse of a situation that he found himself in than the Sainz one when Sainz binned it in quali. Because obviously it's a very similar thing to what Sainz did, that Sainz couldn't catch and completely lost the car. But if anything, Alonso maybe got more into the gravel and had more of that rear wheel dipped over. So it's, for me, it's even more of an impressive save because of that as well, when you factor the two against each other.
There was quite a few around the outside of turn ones. Leclerc on Russell was a good one. That felt a little further back and a real, like, carry the speed and sling it all the way around the outside. I enjoyed that one. We also had Stroll and Magnussen fighting for last place and going side by side for like
both
half a
with lap. Like with both of them impending penalties as well.
Yeah. Well, they were on imposing penalty strategies, let's call it, because Stroll stopped and saved his, if I remember rightly, didn't he? And then Magnussen
after
didn't.
That he did, yeah.
Yeah,
after
so they're actually that. Kind
oh,
of...
It was after they were fighting on track, to be fair, I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a point where it was kind of like, it was almost like an alternate strategy thing where one was taking a penalty at a stop and the other wasn't intending to, and they were kind of battling it off against each other. And there was a point where they were at like completely different parts of the running order, but they were still technically racing each other, like when someone's pitted on an alternate strategy and you know that you're racing them somewhere else up the field, but you're not going to come together until like the end.
It was crazy.
Weird.
I'm amazed they didn't hit each other, especially those two.
Yeah, and that. Yeah.
There was a Hamilton one through like...
Is it 789.
789,
I can't remember who
it
was on.
Who it was.
I think it was on... I mean, it was on someone midfieldy.
I think that's why I've... Yeah, it wasn't like a similar car. It was someone midfieldy or someone on lesser tyres.
What's slightly sad about the whole thing with Alonso clattering into them and... into Sainz and getting that penalty, despite whatever we think about it, like that whole sequence of the two Ferraris, Alonso and whoever else was there in the sprint was
brilliant.
Really
so
good racing
good.
To watch.
Proper racing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made me glad. That was the bit that made me glad. That made me glad I watched the sprint race. That one.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to have watched it.
Definitely. I'm almost inclined to give move of the day just to all of that fight because it was.
Yeah.
Well,
I was sort of hinting at that, but I wasn't sure if it had to be from the GP or if we could.
Yeah, we can give
consider
what
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think Leclerc in the sprint on Sainz and Alonso. That would be. That's how you'd quantify it. I think.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Leclerc gets it then.
Yeah.
So Leclerc technically
is now,
gets
Chris
it.
Is typing this and hosting at the same time, which I'm really impressed by.
Multitasking.
It's all right. I can save him at least like 5 seconds because I can press this.
Honestly, what the
f***
are we doing here?
Yeah, what are we doing here? There were some howlers this weekend.
There really were.
It was a weird weekend.
I mean, we've talked about all the penalties at length. Let's not tread.
Yeah,
that
we don't need to
again.
Go. Yeah, I don't think. Look, the penalties are some of the less weird stuff that's going on this weekend. To be honest, and the penalties are mental. So,
I mean,
outside
you've got-
of racing, I think the grass catching fire. On multiple occasions
was
an interesting scenario.
Weird. Track spontaneously catching fire.
It's like,
I wonder if they've been painting the grass with some sort of thing to make it like more green, maybe.
I wouldn't surprise. I mean,
I wonder if they've been painting the track with something to make it look more black, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, and then just not telling anybody. And the teams
so,
are relative. According to
a supposedly reputable sporting website, motorsport website, it was apparently like some sort of bituminous coating that they give roads in that part of the world to prolong their life. It's like, well, hold on a minute. This is a Formula One grade racetrack. Like, if it needs resurfacing, you resurface it. And also, sounds a lot like paint.
It's not paint. It's a special liquid that we put on, and then it dries and is a hard coating over the top. But it's not paint.
Not paint, though. Definitely not paint.
It was weird.
What else we got? Stroll and Alonso refusing to take any insurance. Yeah, that was like peak Stroll and peak Alonso.
It was, well, it wasn't Alonso. It was Aston Martin basically taking Stroll's side and saying, we don't see what he did wrong.
Because of
instead
course
of just
did.
Staying quiet on it. That was what it was.
What else? The Marshals dropped Tsunoda's car off the crane when they were recovering it. That's a fun onboard you can find online somewhere.
That's messed up. I didn't know that had happened. That's so dangerous. That's lucky someone didn't get hurt really badly, if assuming that they didn't. You'd know about it if one of those things fell on you. Especially as heavy as Formula One cars are these days, you just squash your flat.
I think I'm leaning towards the track just catching fire twice. That's like
I can go with that, but mine is the painting the track, man. Painting the track to make it, like, going around telling everyone, because literally, I'm sure I read like the week before that they'd resurfaced the entire track.
And then you get there and it's like, paint.
What, you mean you've painted it?
They didn't tell you what they'd resurfaced it with, did they? They just said they'd resurfaced it.
And, you know, I'm sure, like, I bet they urgently, like, released a big decree to all the drivers to say, oh, they've definitely, they have painted it, but we can't say they've painted it. They've done some, they've given it a special coating. Just say they've given it a special coating.
Whatever
you
do, don't use the word paint.
Don't use the word paint. Nobody's painted anything, okay?
I think I'm going to resurface this wall behind me in a slightly different tone.
Yeah.
Just give me a slightly different backdrop.
If
I'll resurface
the paint,
the wall.
You'll get 2 penalty points on your license.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I'm with you.
And you'll be taken out back and shot.
Yeah, that's that. No, you're right, Stu. It is that. It is painting
the
track.
That's fair. Shall I run us through some predictions?
Please do.
Okay. So, an all right weekend, at least for the two of you. The double Verstappen obviously pays off dividends usually in most scenarios, and this weekend was one of them. Between you also got a second, well, a third point, one for 17 finishes for Stu and one for Logan Sargeant's position of 17th for Chris. In terms of everybody else out there, there were so many 4 out of 5s, but not quite a 5 out of 5 this week. There's far too many names to like just reel off here as well. There's 22 of you overall that managed to get 4 out of 5. So if you want to work out if you're one of them and you haven't looked already, head to backofthegrid.com where you can see that. And also, because so many people have like scored 4 and 3 points this weekend in different combinations, we've ended up in a position where we had a leader with, I think, 2 people tied for second place before. We've now got a 7-way tie in first place, sorry. Wowza. So there's 7 people together.
It's like
because
Formula E over there.
Yeah, we need to make this thing more difficult.
Well, the funny thing is, though, how many races have we had? 4 races now?
Yeah. We haven't only 5 out of 5. Oh, we've had 1 5
we've
out of 5.
Had 5 out, we've had 5 out of 5, but the highest score is total is still only 14 points out of a possible 20.
No, so, 5 races we've had, actually. So
so that'll be out of a 25 then. So,
I was going to say 14 points. Out of 20 is like hectic. That is an amazing score, whoever's got that. But 14 out of 25 is more what you'd expect, I think, at this point in the season.
So, but it's interesting. Let's put it that way.
Well, there's 2 points on the table.
Very early in the season.
There's 2 points on the table. Easy points on the table every weekend for everyone. So people who are not getting the double Verstappen points are foolish.
Thanks for calling me out directly.
I actually wasn't doing that.
Whatever.
I promise you, I really wasn't.
I mean, look, I'm sure he won't mind me doing this, but I'm going to call out very loyal patron and listener Wes, because he managed to score a big 0 this weekend. I don't know what he was thinking with his predictions, but he got a complete 0. So, Wes, when you hear this, I'm sorry for calling you out by name, but I was literally looking, because as I went down the list, I was thinking, it's going to be one of those weeks, like everyone scored at least a point, at least a point, at least a point, and then poor Wes is like, I mean, he's not the only one, to be fair to Wes, he's not the only one, but his name jumped out at me immediately because he'd gone like, just super optimistic, like Ferrari, gone like Sainz and Leclerc and stuff like that. So he's having fun with it.
Yeah. Another detail I've just noticed is that all three of us are tied currently after five races.
Oh, are we? I didn't notice that one.
We're also in the standings. Tied on 7 points, which means we already have exactly half of the leaders' points.
Brilliant. Oh, well.
I've done well there because I don't think I've entered my predictions onto the website once this season so far.
You're just looking at the site admin. Yeah. Stop saying this because then we have to talk about it. People think that they can do it. Stop it.
You can't.
It's two weeks in a row, so you've done this.
It's crucial that mine are in because I'm part of the show. Everyone else, you know, you forget.
All right. Now,
I do enjoy that technically, according to the website, Stu, you have missed one race, but that's only because you scored zero, so Tom's didn't bother putting them in.
There is an exception to the rule. I don't bother putting them in if there are zero anyway.
That's totally fair.
It's a waste of my time and effort. Right, I'm going to do a quick dip into the fantasy corners.
We've got
F1 fantasy. So over there, Hammy, the Mr. Goat, won this week with 450 points. And overall, our leader is still Chasey Motorsport with 1,377 points now. And then over on the grid rival fantasy, Crusty Onion won this week with 986 points. And our leader there is still the same. That's Mighty Hawk 44 with 4,816 points. If you want to get involved with either the Predictions League or either of those fantasy leagues, head to backofthegrid.com. You can register on our site for our Predictions League. And then there's also a link on there for fantasy leagues, and you can see the links and the joining codes for both F1 Fantasy and Grid Rival. And if you've already made a team and you join it in, you kind of carry your points in. So if you've been playing fantasy elsewhere but want to join in with our leaderboard, it's still worth joining because you'll still get in on there. Right, a little bit of inbox to tie us off, I think, gents.
Let's do it.
Keep me saying now.
Stay out.
Inbox. Amen.
Couple of good ones this week as well.
Who wants to go first?
I'll read the first one. Sarah Kvist says, why wasn't there an instant VSC when Bottas' car stopped in the line of fire? The images of Bottas watching over his shoulder to keep an eye out for cars while trying to fit his steering wheel back was uncomfortable to watch. I agree.
Yeah, that was scary. It took so long, didn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm very surprised it wasn't a full safety car straight away because of where he was stuck. Like, he was essentially at the end of a braking zone. Like, there was an argument that anyone got it wrong going into that corner, they were making a beeline for him. I think there's probably an element of I suppose the team probably did tell him to stay in the car until they knew what the situation was. And at the point that they're told it's just a VSC, they've kind of got to tell him to get out and do that, I suppose. So I don't really want to blame the team for like letting him get out, so to speak. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I feel like when you're in a position like that, it was clear that there was potential for a recovery vehicle that was going to be needed. I mean, there was a point, if I remember rightly, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure there was a point where there was about 8 track marshals around the car trying to get it pushed because they couldn't get it out of neutral, into neutral, or there was something like locked up from whatever had gone wrong with the car. They were struggling to move it. And I feel like at that point, there was still a moment that we were under VSC. I think I could be wrong, but I think there was.
Right. At that time, when it cut to that, it was still VSC.
Yeah.
Like, the moment Bottas needs to get out of the car in that braking zone, it should really be a full safety car. 100%. But to then have, like, 8 marshals or whatever it was going on to help with the vehicle on there, and it's still being a VSC, that it's like, does nobody learn from accidents of the past? Like, that should have been a safety car. I don't think there's any question. And I hope they're at least looking back at it to say, well, you know, who made the decision for it to be where it is and why was it not a safety car? I hope they at least look into it at minimum to make sure it doesn't happen.
They need to.
For people in future.
It was so obvious and took way too long.
Yeah, hopefully they will. Next one. Tom?
Yeah, I can read it if you want. Tom Murray says, hey man, I'm seeing some rumours that there may be some discussion about extending the points positions down to 12th place. Do you know if there is actually any truth to that? And if so, what are your thoughts on the matter?
There is truth to it.
There is.
It has been discussed among the paddock, and the top teams are not opposed to it. I personally think it's ridiculous. I think this has come about because the midfield teams aren't getting any points because there's quite a distinct line between the top five and the bottom five. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the bottom five, make a better car, and then you'll get points.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for anyone who's not seen, basically the points are exactly the same down to seventh place as they currently are. So seventh place is worth 6 points. And then instead of going 4-2-1 for 8th, 9th and 10th, it goes 5-4-3-2-1 all the way down to 12th place.
I mean,
I just don't see the point. Like, if there's already like additional, if you're trying to determine the order of like the championship, there's already means of them determining the order. Like the points don't, the only thing the points do is make it so that you've got to pay, you have to pay for every point that you've earned across the season. And if you don't get any, obviously you don't make any payments for any points. So it won't affect the top teams because they're making the same number of points anyway.
Yeah.
Mm. It will affect the bottom teams because they'll get some points and then they'll have to pay out for those points at the end of the season. It just makes no sense. What, you're going to just start giving participation trophies to Formula One teams now? Like, it's just ridiculous.
I don't know. I don't hate it. Like,
then why not just extend it all the way down the grid and give points for every single position?
Well, yeah, and some series do that. I think having two more places that are actually worth something for teams to fight for, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Because you often get a situation where a position in a championship will be decided basically by a single race. You could have a team that's finished like 11th and 12th for the entire season, and then another team that's been slow on them the whole year will get lucky and nick a 10th place, and that gives them a championship position.
Yeah.
And it's so more points paying positions rewards season-long performance more so.
Moves it a little bit further down. That can still happen. It just moves it two places further down.
I think the thing for me would be do it, but get another team on the grid so that the essentially you still
that way, yeah.
It's like it's still a halfway point basically. You've got to finish in the top half of the grid to get points.
Yeah,
like
I don't have a problem with that.
I'm not particularly opposed to the idea on the whole anyway, because I do sort of side more with Chris's side than probably yours on this one, Stu. But I think ultimately, if you went and let an Andretti or someone in, and part of that was, that means that basically, if it's a 20 car grid, your points paying positions are down to 10th. And if it's a 22 car grid, they go down to 12th or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to know where this entire concept falls apart?
Go on.
It's that this is a rule change being suggested based on the order of running this season.
Yeah.
But they won't make this change until next season. What's to say that we won't have this problem next season and it'll just be back to, you know,
a
regular grid, or the field might tighten up even more and this just not even be an issue? You know, it's very specific to this season. And I just feel it feels very knee-jerk to me. I feel like going forward, you know, the likelihood is they'll close up much, much closer next season still, because that's been the trend in recent in this formula, and it is the trend across Formula One across many, many years. When the formula remains the same, the pack gets closer and closer. If they were going to implement this change this season, then I'd be more interested. But the fact that it's not coming until next season and the playing field's going to change next season anyway, then what is that? Why are we even talking about it? Is that for me?
I will say, at least, because I know MotoGP, they award points all the way down to 15th, but they are still on a 25-1 scale, like stretched out over more. And for me, that's too diluted and it's not rewarding victories enough.
For your
Because there was a period of time in F1 when it was 10 points for a win and 8 points for second. And
yeah.
That always bothered me because I think a win should be worth significantly more than that. And with the current system, like 25 to 18 feels more
You've
like
got a nice
it.
Step.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was introduced to make people want to win races more, wasn't it? Like to people not make them not think about champions. For some reason, they thought Formula One drivers didn't want to win races and they were happy to come second and not fight for victories. It's just absolute complete nonsense in itself. But I mean, I think with the MotoGP thing, did they not have like essentially a two-tier championship for a long time? You had the satellite teams and you had the factory teams, and they had their own separate championships running.
You'd occasionally have a satellite team in amongst there. No, there's. I mean, it's a long time since I followed the MotoGP as closely as I do stuff like Formula One, but there was an era where you essentially had like Yamaha and Honda fighting each other at the front with mainly satellite teams behind them, and you had a couple of other factory teams that were there or thereabouts, and it was akin to like say having the Red Bull Mercedes season that we had in 2021 with a couple of other manufacturers that were there or thereabouts, like your Ferraris and stuff, that would maybe clean up points if there was an opportunity but weren't properly in the title fight. Then everyone else was a satellite team, i.e. a customer team. So like there was an era like that when I'm talking like pushing nearly 10 years ago that it was like that. It was like when Lorenzo was winning a lot on the Yamaha and Marc Marquez first came in on the Honda. That was like when those two teams were essentially, it was one or the other of them that was winning pretty much. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but I'm sure people that follow both know like, where I'm coming from with that simplification.
To bring it back to Formula One as well, like I think this point system kind of makes... When the midfield, when the two sets of cars are all so close together in their individual batches anyway, then again, you know, if you've got one team, you're not going to have one team that gets lucky because the competitive order changes so often behind Verstappen. The competitive order is quite fluid at the moment. So you're going to get, you know, you're going to get your Hamiltons dropping out of the points, your Russells dropping out of the points. You're going to get the odd Ferrari dropping out of the points. You're going to get Aston's dropping out the points as well. And those guys behind in those bottom five teams, they're in exactly the same situation, except they don't have a Verstappen at the very front of them. So any one of them can break their way into the top 10, I think. There's only really maybe one or two in that group who you just can't see getting any points this season. I won't name names because that's unfair, but I've definitely got an opinion on who I think they are. You know, but the Williams can finish. We've seen the Williams almost. Has Williams got points? I'm sure like they've all got a point, have they not now? I know Sauber haven't.
Williams, Alpine and Kik Sauber are the three that don't have any points yet. Alpine obviously looked a lot better this weekend. Like the floor upgrades have put them a step in the right direction and they might actually be able to start pushing in the right direction now. Williams have looked okay at times in the hands of Albon, but the problem is that they've got the minute is lack of points, and between them, both of them, to be fair, silly mistakes leading to accidents that's leading to compromise of upgrades and not being able to keep running the upgrades that they've put on the car because they've broke them. And then Sauber just seemed to have like absolutely zero luck. If it's not the pit stops like it was for the first few races, it's stuff like whatever's gone on with Zhou Guanyu going from the heights of the sprint to the woes of the GP, or Bottas's engine blowing
and
up. And
the whole other thing here is, so any one of those teams, I think across a season, any one of those teams can score points.
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second that they, will finish without a single point.
Yeah.
It's up to them to perform. It's up to them to show up and be good enough to pick up the scraps. Cause that's Formula One. Yeah. That's what it is when you're in the lower teams. And at the end of the day, look, we're five races into a season and we're talking about changing the point system because five teams have not scored a point yet. And, certain teams haven't scored a point yet. It's just, no, you don't need to change the point system at this point. If we get to the end of the season and you've got five teams that haven't scored a point and five teams that have scored all the points, then maybe you'd think about it. Or if you went two seasons and that was the case, you'd definitely be thinking about it. But five races into a season, no, this doesn't need to change one bit.
I mean, the problem is not necessarily the point system, though, is it? Like, I think is the other side of what you're saying there, is if you went two seasons in a row where the top five was essentially the same, like, for argument's sake, like the current top five, Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, Aston Martin, yeah, and then the other five were basically scoring little to no points. Like, let's say they were all single-digit figures at best for the next two seasons. You've got a problem there with something where it's either... I don't think tweaking the points really does anything, though, because you'd still end up in the same position. It's just those bottom five teams would just have double digits instead of single digits.
Well, then
it'd just
be the bottom six. Well, maybe it'd just be the bottom 60. I don't know. Like, it's premature. Let's suffice to say, it is premature to be talking about changing the points.
The problem would be with the other things, like the certain areas of the regulations or certain areas of the budget aspects, whatever, or the way that the wind tunnel restrictions are handed out, depending on where you finish. It's things like that that you want to look to adjust before the point system, in theory. And I think that's why I sort of sit in the middle, because like I said earlier on in this, if we're in a position where we've added two more teams to the grid and you're suddenly saying we're paying down to 12 placing points because that's the halfway point of 24 cars, mm-hmm, I'm all for that. There's because it's a bigger grid.
Yeah.
But I think just doing it for the sake of, oh, we feel sorry for Williams and Alpine that they're not scoring, and Sauber that they're not scored any points yet this season, is the problem is more, well, why haven't they scored points yet? Yeah. Why is there a gulf between a top five and a bottom five in that scenario? Yeah.
And we should have
fixed them problems
first
instead. Yeah, and at least you've ended on a high.
Although I'm not against this change necessarily, I do also think the current point system is the best point system F1 has ever had, and I don't think it needs changing necessarily. Yeah. And no. I think there's way more important things that the F1 Commission should be talking about than the point system as well. But
agreed.
I don't think it's solving a particular problem. You know, they're all competitive. They're all competing with each other. They're all going for it still. It's not going to change that. Like, the action on track is going to be the same no matter what. So, yeah, this has no effect on...
I mean, you've only got to look at the way Magnussen and Stroll were dueling over last place to show that you don't need to have a point on the table for drivers to race each other.
Yeah.
So...
True.
Exactly. Even with penalties stacked up, they're still going hell for leather against each other.
Yeah.
All right, should we wrap up?
I think so.
That is us done for our Chinese Grand Prix review. Thank you, as always, for joining us. As ever, if you want to get in touch, backthegrid.com is where you can find a contact form, and also check out the Predictions League and all the fantasy leagues and all that stuff. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those kind of things. If you are interested in getting involved with our Discord community, you can go to patreon.com/backofthegrid to find out how to do that. I think that is everything. If you didn't watch the IndyCar or World Endurance Championship races over the weekend, both of those are worth going and having a little look at the highlights of. But until next time, I think that is all. So we'll be back next week, I think, to preview the...
next Grand Prix.
Miami Grand Prix.
I know I shouldn't have left you hanging there, but I was waiting to see if it came to you.
Yes, we're back in a week to preview Miami, but until then, thank you for joining us and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.